I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. And along with saving the babies, mothers are being counseled with practical and spiritual advice to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. The goal is to save 70,000 by the end of the year, and they can't do it without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound that changes everything. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. I'm Walker Wildman. Good to be with you today on the program. A lot of news to cover, and we'll be doing it this segment and the rest of the show. And we'll have a guest on in the second segment. Paul Runco will be with us of Defending Education. We'll be talking to him about the teachers' unions. And how they steal from teachers. So you'll want to hear about that. All right, Proverbs 22 is where we are this week. A good name is to be more desired than great wealth. Favor is better than silver and gold. The rich and the poor have a common bond. This is verse 2. The Lord is the maker of them all. So if you want to be humbled for the day and really given a sense of peace, it says in verse 2 here of Proverbs 22 that the rich and the poor have a common bond. The Lord is the maker of them all, which also means that the Lord is the final judge of them all, both the rich and the poor. So we'll all stand before God one day and give an account for our deeds and our faith, or the lack thereof. And that's the great equalizer, as many people have called it over the years, over history. God is the great equalizer in that we're all going to face eternity. And it doesn't matter what type of wealth you have or which family background you come from or which nation you're born in. We're all going to face that common reality in the future and eternity. All right, one event that I want to mention, well, I guess we can mention a couple, but the one that came to mind for me is our weekend with AFA. This is going to be in October, the first weekend of October. Coming up pretty soon is our weekend with AFA. This is going to be here in Tupelo, Mississippi. We're going to have a great lineup of speakers, including Abraham Hamilton III, Jerry Boyer with Boyer Research, Jenna Ellis will be coming into town, and others, Timothy Barton with Wall Builders. That's just four of many speakers at our weekend with AFA. We're going to have an evening of fellowship here at our national headquarters. Some of you who haven't seen our brand new facilities can check it out. All of that's going to be happening in October. And so we would love for you to join us. It's a weekend with AFA, and we hope you join us. If you just go to afa.net/weekend, afa.net /weekend. The dates are October 2 through 4. October 2 through 4 here in Tupelo, Mississippi, coming up here pretty soon. So go ahead and check it out. We do have registration still open, and we look forward to seeing you there. And then lastly, we'll be in Greece. We'll be in Israel and Greece in March of 2026 with our spiritual heritage tours, where we will visit the land of the Bible, both Israel, that'll be the first leg of the trip, and then Greece or Footsteps of Paul will be the second trip, and you can do one or both. That's up to you. We do have a good amount of people that are doing both with us in Israel and Greece. And so you can go over to wildmangroup.com to check out those dates and the itinerary and the pricing and all the information over at wildmangroup.com. All right, let's talk immigration. This is a tragic story, and we'll use this story to begin our discussion. This is a tragic story out of Florida, where an 18-wheeler, a big rig, as they call them, tried to conduct a illegal U-turn on the interstate using an emergency services drive, which many of us who travel, you've seen these kind of gravel drives in the median that are meant for law enforcement and medical services. Well, this driver broke the law and decided he was going to make an illegal U-turn on the interstate in Florida. And it resulted in a tragic death of three individuals from Florida. And what do you know? The driver is an illegal immigrant. Let's listen to a little bit of this backstory. This is going to be clip two.
The White House's rapid response social media account reposted a video of the accident with a statement criticizing the state of California for granting Singh a commercial driver's license.
The White House posting this. This individual is an illegal immigrant who was granted a commercial driver's license by the state of California, and now three innocent people are dead. A White House spokesperson adding, this is a devastating tragedy made even worse by the fact that it was totally preventable. Illegal aliens that have no legal right to be in our country certainly should not be granted commercial driver's licenses.
All right, so this is a tragedy on multiple fronts. Number one, the fatalities alone are tragic, regardless of how it occurs. I want to highlight, though, the infuriating reality that this was completely preventable. Now, some might say, well, aren't many deaths preventable? Well, yeah, but that's not the point here. The point here is that had this individual, number one, not been in the country illegally, and number two, not been granted a commercial driver's license, which we'll talk about, then there would have been no illegal immigrant driving in Florida making a U-turn on the interstate. Okay, and so any counter argument that said, well, this just as easily could have been an American citizen driving the 18-wheeler. Yeah, but it wasn't. It wasn't. So that's not relevant here. Well, aren't there many unqualified American citizens driving big rigs? Yeah, there are, but that's not relevant here. This is an illegal immigrant brought in by a prior administration, of which we still don't know yet how he got in the country, and was granted a commercial driver's license by at least one state, Washington State. And so this was 100% preventable on multiple fronts, having to do with our government and the lack of enforcement of our immigration laws. And you can extrapolate this example to every other example of rape, murder, etc., that takes place by an illegal immigrant, 100% preventable if we enforce our immigration laws and we don't allow these people into our country. Better yet, we also, not only do we not let them in our country, but if for some reason they make it in, we don't give them commercial driver's license. All right, so let's go through the breakdown, the utter failure. By the way, I hope that the families of the victims sue the company, the trucking company, and the states of which validated this guy's invalid license, I hope this family sues him into oblivion. I'm talking multi-billion dollar judgment, shut the whole thing down. All right, so Washington State, listen to the epic failures here that led to, once again, we're talking about three U.S. citizens dying, which is now it's a homicide investigation at this point, in Florida on the interstate because this illegal immigrant didn't know what he was doing driving, couldn't speak English, couldn't read signage. Washington State improperly issued the driver a full-term commercial driver's license. Completely illegal. That was Washington State. There's no law that allows that, but they did it anyway. New Mexico failed to conduct an English language. This is the rap sheet of this driver. New Mexico failed to conduct an English language proficiency test when they pulled the driver over for speeding. Had this been done, this is according to Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, had this been done, the driver would have not been on the road because his license would have been pulled. Also, there are some reports that California also issued the driver a commercial driver's license. This has yet to been confirmed yet, but this is at least they're looking into it. But we know for a fact that Washington State issued a full-term commercial driver's license to this illegal immigrant. New Mexico law enforcement failed to conduct an English language proficiency test when they pulled the driver over. And now we know the driver could not speak English and could not read the signage. How do we know that? Because Florida Highway Patrol and probably the feds conducted a English proficiency test while on the scene of this tragic incident. And the driver failed by a long shot. I think it was like 30% out of 100 that the driver passed. It was an epic failure. They couldn't even talk to him. There was no communication. And so this is why President Trump was elected. And the fact that we still have these illegal immigrants in our country like this is just an utter tragedy. And American citizens are dying because of it. All right, let's play clip 5 here in the few minutes we have left. This is going to be a report on the executive order that President Trump has signed recently regarding English speaking and reading requirements for commercial driver's license. Let's listen.
President Donald Trump's putting teeth into a decades-old federal rule requiring commercial truck drivers to read and speak English. The executive order signed in April mandates that drivers must pass on-the-spot English proficiency tests as a non-negotiable safety standard. Secretary of Transportation Sean Duffy says the law put in place during the Obama administration has never properly been enforced.
Allowing drivers who cannot read stop signs or understand police officers' instructions to operate an 80,000-pound big rig threatens the safety of every American on our roadways.
The two-step test requires drivers first respond to authorities sufficiently in English. If the driver passes, but the officer suspects incompetency, step 2 requires they pass a highway traffic sign assessment.
The side of the road test regarding this executive order is really about proficiency. Some basic English, when you look at a sign, you understand what it means. To protect everyone on the road.
Supporters say the issue is about safety, not politics. Alex Miller is the president and CEO of the Florida Trucking Association. She tells me all drivers, especially those operating 40-ton rigs, need to fully grasp what's on the road.
I think that it is a significant issue, especially when there are so many cross-border trucking companies and then moving goods, you know, back and forth from Mexico.
Failing the test puts the driver out of service immediately and could disqualify them from obtaining a CDL in the future.
All right, well, there you have it. So this is, I'm telling you, I've never seen such a clear example of the tragic consequences of this horrendous, evil Democrat nightmare agenda of open borders. This is it. And I'm so tired of the issue of illegal immigration being brushed off are made just a, quote, Republican issue, and you guys just don't like immigrants, give me a break. We let over a million legal immigrants in this country every year, and I think that's probably too many. A million every year. Plus the illegals on top of that. We're letting millions of people enter our country every year. And you want to lecture me on compassion and loving immigrants? Give me a break. Give me a break. As Americans, our citizens and our government have a moral responsibility to protect the citizens and the voters of this country. That's their foremost loyalty, their foremost duty when they are sworn into office, to protect the homeland from enemies, foreign and domestic. And the Democrats have utterly failed, and people are paying the ultimate price. We'll be back in a few.
Listen to these words from the Apostle Paul talking to the church in Ephesus in Ephesians 4. He says, "Let the thief steal no longer, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need." So clearly, a part of why God entrusts his resources to us is so we can give. Now, when I look at the New Testament, I see several ways we're to give according to God's word. We're to give cheerfully and not under compulsion. We're to give sacrificially. We can see that clearly with the widow's mite, the most famous giver in all of Scripture, and yet we don't even know her name. We're also to give proportionately. To whom much is given, much is required. Is it time for you to take a step back and make a plan to give? Well, the team at AFA Foundation would be happy to help you plan your giving to do it wisely and tax efficiently. Just visit afafoundation.net.
At the Core podcasts are available at afr.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Core. We're going to talk more immigration in the last segment. I've got a couple of stories and clips, and we'll continue this discussion about illegal immigrants being let into our country and our government refusing to properly deport them, and then how our government is creating victim after victim to the tune of thousands of American citizens falling victim to illegal immigrants and their crimes. So we'll talk more about that here in the last segment. I want to welcome to the program Paul Runco. He's Director of Strategic Initiatives at Defending Education's, specifically focusing on their K-12 programs at Defending Education Organization. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Walker.
Paul, you guys are experts in this whole topic of education in America, and obviously your focus is the K-12 programs. The NEA, otherwise known as the National Education Association, basically the teachers' union, they've been left-wing for a long, long time. But you guys have been covering their annual conference, and it's all out in the open as far as their wokeness. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so just for everybody listening who may not be familiar, the National Education Association, like you mentioned, is the largest teachers union in America. So they represent quite a bit of the teachers in the country. And if your child goes to school, it's likely that your child's teacher is represented by either the NEA or the American Federation of Teachers is the other big one. And I think it's important to set the stage and say, when the average American parent hears the words, you know, teachers union, they think of their child's classroom teacher. That's really nice, sweet, helpful. And they probably assume that the teachers union is just one big group of those types of people. And what parents don't realize, but they're starting to wake up to, is that the teachers unions have become very ideological and mostly focused on what people would refer to as culture war issues instead of academic achievement in schools.
Yeah, talk about, Paul, the setup of the teachers union or the NEA, because, and I know there's some of these state associations as well, which are problematic, but a lot of teachers are tricked into thinking that these union dues are mandatory, and they may be in certain states, but I know, for example, in Mississippi, when my wife went into the public system early on, it was presented to her like, hey, you got to pay these union dues. I mean, this is no option. If you want to be a teacher, you're going to be a part of the union, until we started asking questions. And of course, it's optional. But talk about how many teachers are like tricked into joining and funding this union that doesn't support or fund or help students or teachers.
Well, what you described is exactly right. Typically, and I'm not, I don't have a past as an educator, but from what I've heard of my colleagues who were and are teachers, say that usually on your first day of school, your first day as a teacher, or even before then, you're approached by a union rep, and you know they give you the nice pitch of why you should join them, and you know they essentially pitch them as someone who will go to bat for you on your behalf if something were to happen to you as a teacher. And you know that sounds great. And but the NEA specifically, who had their annual meeting this summer, really showed their true colors. And unfortunately, they've been at this for years, but they passed some resolutions during their annual meeting that I think people really would find concerning. And again, this is the organization that is supposed to represent teachers and theoretically be for, you know, teaching kids how to learn to read, write, and do math. And so I'll just read a few of these resolutions that they passed over the summer. The first one is, the NEA pledges to defend democracy against Trump's embrace of fascism by using the term fascism in NEA materials to correctly characterize Donald Trump's program and actions. I mean, does that sound to you like an organization that has students and teachers first?
No, it sounds like the Democrat Party. And that's what the NEA, Paul, and you guys know this very well, that's what the NEA has become, is a hard wing, is a hard far left wing of the Democrat Party.
Yeah, no, and it's really sad. Like I mentioned at the beginning, most parents probably think the teachers' union is, you know, a group of these really kind teachers that they see every day in their schools, and there's a lot of great American teachers. But the teachers' unions, you know, the organization that's supposed to represent them, instead of focusing on improving academics or helping kids recover from, you know, COVID learning loss, they're spending their members' dues on these partisan resolutions, like attacking Trump. There was one about calling the elimination of the U.S. Department racist. Also decided to break ties or not endorse or not participate in anything from the Anti-Defamation League, which is a very organization that fights against anti-Semitism in schools specifically. So, yeah, it's not something that the normal person would look at and say this is a non-biased organization.
Once again, we're talking to Paul Runco with Defending Education. Paul, what is the NEA's reach here? Because you know, they obviously are a major player in the education space, especially from a left-wing perspective, with, you know, their leader, Weingarten, I believe, cozying up to Democrats, national Democrats. What's their reach from a state breakdown? I mean, are they everywhere? Are they mainly in blue states? What's the NEA's reach?
Yeah, they pretty much have a presence everywhere. You know, in the more blue states, they have a pretty solidified presence in terms of influencing what happens at local schools and local elections. In some of the more, you know, Republican states, they still have a presence, even though they might not be as powerful just based on, you know, what your state's laws are. But they're pushing these types of ideologies, you know, no matter what state you are in. So unfortunately, if you're a parent in a state like Florida or Arkansas or even Mississippi. You have to keep your eyes on this because some of these things I mentioned that they support at their annual meeting, they trickle down into the classroom. We recently put out a report at Defending Education about how the teachers' unions in their contracts with school districts will embed this, you know, DEI, critical race theory type ideology in their contracts. And so the school districts essentially have no choice but to do it.
Let me ask you another question related to the NEA. Once again, we're talking about the National Educators Association, which is everything but that at this point in the juncture. This goes back to the early 1900s, this special charter. I'm not familiar. You and I didn't talk about this before, so you may not be really abreast on this, and I'm not either. That's why I'm asking. But doesn't the NEA have some kind of special charter status that gives them preferential treatment regarding basically being the only national educators lobby or union?
They do, and you're seeing a lot of pushback on this for exactly the reasons we're talking about. You know, families, they learn about these things that the National Education Association, the biggest teachers union in the country, what they're doing, and they realize, wait a second, I send my kids to school to learn how to do math, to read, learn history. I don't send them to school to be caught in the middle of, you know, a political debate or a political war. And the fact that they spend so much money on these ideological campaigns and passing resolutions against President Trump and against, you know, his position on the Department of Education and other things is money that's not spent supporting teachers and kids in the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. The teachers union basically has become the administrators union. This is about the administrators and the higher ups and the growth of the bureaucracy and the administration and little about teachers. I mean, when you look at the financial breakdown, all of the new monies, if you will, at the state level devoted to education largely go to the administrative level, and very few dollars actually make it to the classroom, which in and of itself is a problem. Hey, Paul, tell our folks where they can read more about your work and even some of you guys' reports on this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. You can check us out online at defendinged.org. We're on all the major social media platforms at defendinged. If parents have anything that they're concerned about in their school, they can send us a message and we'll be happy to help them figure out the best course forward.
Excellent, Paul. Hey, thanks so much for coming on.
All right, thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Paul Runco with Defending Education. And defendinged.org is that URL, defendinged.org. And they've got some great resources here, including an indoctrination map where you can see various ground reports of indoctrination, left-wing indoctrination going on around the country. So go check out defendinged.org. They're doing a lot of great work around the country and also exposing the National Teachers Union for the left-wing entity that it has become, and it has been for a long time. This issue goes back decades. But pivoting back into our immigration topic, the one good thing that one of the good things that came from the One Big Beautiful Bill, as President Trump calls it, is a massive surge in border security and Immigrations and Customs Enforcement spending. And we'll talk about more of that here shortly and towards the next segment. But I wanted to briefly go back to the details of this driver who has since been arrested by the feds, by the U.S. Marshals Service. This driver, Harnit Singh, that is allegedly responsible for three fatalities in the state of Florida on a turnpike in St. Lucie County. So it wasn't on the interstate, it was on a turnpike in Florida, just 8 days ago. The investigation, this is according to the U.S. Marshals Service. The U.S. Marshals received a warrant associated with information from the Florida Highway Patrol they receive that warrant for the arrest of this driver on August 16th and made the arrest just a couple, actually that day, same day that they received the warrant, U.S. Marshals Service in California arrested the driver in the Sacramento area. But here's a look. Here's what I wanted to get to is, according to the U.S. Marshals Service, this driver did receive a California commercial driver's license, which was questionable earlier in the show, and questionable with the transportation secretary as of a couple days ago. But the U.S. Marshals Service is confirming that both California and Washington State both gave this illegal immigrant a commercial driver's license. And the illegal immigrant entered the country illegally, obviously, in 2018 and has been allowed to remain in the country and been allowed to drive a commercial vehicle for years. And there are multiple instances of this driver interacting with state law enforcement, of which they did nothing. And the point that Bobby and I were talking about over the break is that, Bobby, the talking point that Trump's team has put out, and thankfully Tom Holman has countered this a little bit, but this quote Republican talking point that, well, we're just going after the criminals and the murderers and the rapists, the worst of the worst, they say. Bobby, the problem with that is that they're not the worst of the worst until it's too late, until there's already victims, of which then they're, quote, eligible for deportation according to this made-up kind of sentimental theory.
Yeah, it becomes a theory of ready, shoot, aim. And it's coming back to bite us for sure. Familial losses. You can't even fathom, especially with these three people, and I think it was in a minivan, and a family of three,
yeah, that's right,
perished for no good reason.
Yeah, completely preventable.
Yeah, and this is, if you will, an everyday run-of-the-mill illegal,
yeah,
who's been under the wire. I believe you mentioned he's been here illegally since 2018.
Yep.
Still hasn't assimilated. Still hasn't learned English. Still hasn't learned.
That's a good point.
The aspects of his trade, i.e., traffic signs,
which he does,
every day.
Yeah.
And still hasn't learned.
Wow.
I mean, you're taking a rig like that and trying to cross over a median. You never do that. You never see a big rig do that ever.
No.
It's just incomprehensible.
Yeah, and those trailers are very dangerous, if not driven properly.
Yeah, and most of them, I believe the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration came out with a report not that long ago. Maintenance on big rigs like that is horrific at best.
Yeah, exactly, folks. This story here and others, there's thousands of others, cuts directly against this narrative this narrative is parroted by Republicans and conservatives. We've even probably parroted it on this radio network. But this narrative that, oh, we only need to deport the criminals. If you're not they're all criminals because they cross the border illegally. But if you're not a repeat offender, I mean, you can just stay here as long as you work.
Yeah, and staying under the radar.
Don't cause us any trouble. You can stay around. Well, not only is that counter to federal law and the spirit of our laws, but that's operating under the assumption that we're going to create victims before we do anything, which is a terrible way to operate. We'll be back.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, just type in the name of the program, At the Core, and click the subscribe button. We'd love to have you subscribe or follow the show, and we'll upload the podcast into your library each and every day. Well, back to our consistent topic for the show, with the exception of a brief interview on the education topic, back to our topic of immigration, specifically illegal immigration, I want to break down the case for consistent leadership in the White House for national security reasons, specifically on the topic of immigration. All right, this is not an endorsement of any political party. This is not an endorsement of any future potential candidate. This is simply the case for which party and what type of leadership that focuses on border and national security can achieve in due time. I've got to admit, I'm learning stuff that the Trump administration has been working on for 6 months that I didn't even know they were working on until now. So, shame on me. I guess there's just been too much going on. But in the One Big Beautiful Bill, otherwise known as House Resolution 1, that is now law, the bill provides $45 billion for immigration detention centers, including family detention centers, because that's what the left talks about. Oh, it's families coming across the border, even though it's actually not. Some, very few. Mostly human trafficking, kids being trafficked, both human and sexually and otherwise. This $45 billion budget that Department of Homeland Security has been given can support up to 100,000 beds, detention beds. And so now it's all starting to make sense. So we have Alligator Alcatraz. We have the Speedway Slammer in Indiana, which we'll talk about. We have, this one's going up in Nebraska. Let me pull it up real quick. You may have it, Bobby.
Yeah, Cornhusker Clink.
That's prolific.
I think I looked this morning, there's nearly two dozen ICE detention facilities that are being spun up rapidly in red states all around the country. Texas, Florida, Nebraska, Iowa, elsewhere. All around the country. There's a map. They're all around the country. What the Trump administration and Republicans have brilliantly done is they've provided the money that has previously been withheld to ensure that immediately when illegal immigrants are apprehended by the feds, or locals, or state law enforcement, they can be transported to these federal detention facilities and held until they can be deported. So no more excuses from local and state law enforcement that, well, we don't have the facilities for this, which is true. We don't have the facilities for this. We can't hold illegals. We don't have the beds. We don't have the beds. We don't have the money. Nobody's going to pay for it. So the Trump administration and Republicans have said, oh, we got it. Don't worry. We got it. We'll fund the retainers. We'll fund the facilities. We'll fund transportation. We'll do reimbursements for local and state law enforcement. We'll do it all. Don't worry about it. And so now you've essentially created an incentive structure where states are now incentivized to set up these ICE detention facilities and partner with the feds to make this happen. The One Big Beautiful Bill also has $3.5 billion to reimburse state and local governments for costs associated with assisting immigration enforcement. Okay, so now we've got the carrot. The bill caps the number of immigration judges at 800, which is better than we've had in the past. And it also deputizes various federal law enforcement to de facto serve as immigration judges, which is a very big deal. And so you're having immigration and customs enforcement facilities put together rapidly in states all around the country to where we're going to be at 80,000 beds before probably within the next 12 months. Now, looking at the border wall, the One Big Beautiful Bill provides 100% funding for the remainder of the border wall. Currently, roughly 700 miles are fenced or have some kind of physical barrier. The border is about 1,900 miles long. That leaves you over 1,000 miles that are unfenced, unwalled, if that's a word. Not walled. And the problem is not the money at this point. It's the pace of construction. Every mile is different, but according to the Department of Homeland Security, actually, according to Kristi Noem herself, the secretary, she stated this month that the government was able to build about a half a mile of barrier daily, which is not bad. I mean, a half a mile of wall a day is not bad, to be honest. And I'm familiar with the construction world. That's pretty good. A half mile is a lot of wall. The problem is if you finish out the wall, just looking at simple math, and math was not my strong suit, you're looking over 6 years to finish the wall at that pace. And once again, some parts of the wall might be faster than others. She was just talking about a complete average. We've got tens of millions of illegals in this country illegally. Oh, I keep doubling up illegally. We've got tens of millions of illegal immigrants in the country. How do we know this? We know this because under Biden alone, according to government numbers, it was roughly 10 million. The Trump administration, looking back, says it was way more than that over the 4 years of Biden. Either way, I don't really care whether you say it was 8 million or 12 million under Biden. It really doesn't matter because we had 20 million plus here before. And the media keeps using these old immigration numbers. Let's try this right now, Bobby. I'm gonna see what Google says. How many illegal immigrants are in the U.S.? Okay. This is hilarious. All right, so this is, once again, this is Google. They're citing Pew Research and some other sources. Sources, in air quotes. All right, so this is the deception, Bobby. According to Pew, the current number, okay, in 2022, there were an estimated 11 million unauthorized immigrants living in the U.S. Bobby, how do they lie so hard about these numbers? Biden let in 11 million.
It's so lowballed, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and we didn't deport that many. And so there's tens of millions. That's the reality. There was 12 million in 07, according to Pew. So this is using the same data sets and the same organization to say there were, 11 million. Give me a break. Biden let in 11 million. And then there were tens of millions before Biden.
Okay, well, let's go with that. So you had 12 million back in 07, roughly. Yeah. During Obama's administration, he had deported approximately 3.5 million.
Yes.
So now you're at 8.5. Biden had deported about 1.5.
But remember, they're flowing in as they're
deporting them. Correct. Correct. And that's the other part of the equation. You got rid of 1.5 million, but on the other door that was unguarded, you let in, between 10 and 11.
Yeah.
So clearly, it's not stretching the amount to say you're in tens of millions of bodies.
Yes.
No question.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just look at, okay, Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR. This is a conservative-leaning think tank, very good on the issue. So let's look at what they have to say. According to FAIR, Federation for American Immigration Reform, there were 15 million illegal immigrants in the country at the end of Trump's first term. Then Biden lets in 10 million. That's 25 million.
Tens of millions.
Yes. So we're at tens of millions. We're easily over 20 million beyond the shadow of a doubt. 100% we're up, we're north of 20 million.
Yeah, and that's a low figure now.
It is a low figure.
It used to be, well, we have upwards of 20. No, now
30.
20 is the bottom figure.
20 million is the bottom figure, that's for sure. And how will we really know? We probably won't. We won't unless our Census Bureau was honest and we got a little more detailed in how we count things. The point I'm getting to is that this is a multi-administration approach. This is not, I'm just telling you, if the American people let their guard down, and we say collectively as a voting base, let's try Gavin Newsom, let's try Hakeem Jeffries as House Speaker, let's try Chuck Schumer as Senate Majority Leader.
Again.
We're going to be right back in the same place where the story of the illegal immigrant being investigated for homicide in Florida for trying to make a U-turn on the turnpike in his 18-wheeler, killing three American citizens, that's going to be an everyday headline. We'll go back to the same problem. Between the deportation rate and the rate in which it will take to build the wall to finish it, America needs at least 8 years to even begin to heal from this trauma of corruption and ineptitude. And that's just to get us to a place where we can breathe a little bit. That's not talking about full healing here. And I'm not even talking about the economy. That's a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
How long is it going to take? How long is it going to take to get to pre-COVID economic numbers, from inflation to homeownership to wages to interest rates? I mean, across the board. Because I know President Trump's doing all that he can, and I believe they are. I believe the feds are doing all that they can. But my friends, we are nowhere near close to a recovery from the immigration issue or from the economic issue. Nowhere near a recovery. We're just starting to see the wounds heal a little bit. And so this is going to have to be successful on the immigration front. Let's go back to that. To be fully successful and get this country to a place where we take our federal laws seriously and we protect the homeland, we have to defy the odds. We have to defy modern history's tendency to swing the pendulum back and forth between political parties and have this inconsistent leadership. So the American people are going to have to understand when they go to the ballot box in the midterms and in the next presidential election that in order for this to not all go to the wayside, we have to have sensible leadership for a decade plus. And this is every day, all day, doing the right thing from a leadership perspective. It did not take us 8 years to get to where we are today. This has been a multi-decade failure of leadership from the Clintons to the Bushes to the Obamas to the Bidens. A multi-decade failure of leadership, Republican establishment weaklings in bed with the Democrat Party, flushing our country down the toilet. That pretty much sums up the last 30 years of our country, with some rare exceptions. And so if it took us 30 years to get here, 40 years to get here, we're not going to get out of it in 4 years. This is a long-term approach to restoring sanity in our country. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.